now remember, as we talk about the world of persuasion and objections and human nature, you have to understand your audience, your prospect, your client, your patient, whoever it is that you want to persuade, understand something very important. That many times what happens as a persuader is you create the hunger, but they satisfy that hunger somewhere else. It's almost like a knee-jerk reaction. For example, you're talking about this great new restaurant in town. It's very expensive. It's $50 a plate. It's incredible. They do this and this, and the service is incredible. And the person wants to go. They feel hungry, and you're trying to persuade them to go there. You've created the hunger, but all of a sudden, they went to a fast food restaurant instead and satisfied the hunger. Now, you know as well as I do that they're very different between a fast food restaurant and a very nice, expensive restaurant. Both will get you full. But when you look in the real world, the results are different. For example, I remember monitoring a meeting. I was doing some persuasion training for a network marketing company that talked about nutritional products, that talked about how we weren't getting the nutrition and vitamins and nutrients we need out of the food that we were eating. They had proof from the American Medical Association, and everything was documented, and they created this hunger or this desire for me to take nutritional products. Now, of course, they wanted me to take their product, which was very good but very expensive. So what I did is I went to the store, and I looked at different nutritionals. Oh, there's one a day and a few others. Well, that's kind of expensive. I ended up buying the marquee brand of nutritionals. It was a generic brand, which, of course, now I know does absolutely nothing, but at the time, it satisfied that hunger. Another example, went to a stock market seminar, and they had the system and this software and different things that pretty much ensured you were going to be successful investing in the stock market. And it was exciting, but the price was very high, thousands and thousands of dollars. And I thought to myself, wow, I want to get into the stock market. Look at all the success stories. Look at all the millionaires that it's created. I want to do the stock market. So they created the hunger. And what I ended up doing is going to eBay and purchase some other, you know, stock market programs, and had devastating consequences. So they created the hunger. I took a different route to satisfy that hunger with devastating consequences. And that happens time and time again. You don't want people to satisfy their hunger someone else. You don't want to get people hungry for your product or service. You don't want to create dissonance in them that they need to do something about their situation and go someplace else. We see that time and time again. And you believe in your product, service, or idea, and you have to realize that you have a moral and ethical obligation to persuade people, because if you don't persuade them to do or use your product or service, they're going to go someplace else. Probably to someone who doesn't care as much, maybe an inferior product or a product that doesn't work, but someone else is going to persuade them to do that. So I do believe with my whole heart that when you have a product or service that can change lives, it can help people. And many times as a persuader, you can see how it can help them more than they can see it, is that you need to use the power of persuasion to get them into it. Because time and time again, you see it when you believe in your product or service, people will come back and say, thank you. Thanks for persuading me to do that. Because they were resisting you, but you had the right tools to get them in the right spot. Another example, even at my seminars, I talk about advanced coaching, other things people can do to really enhance their power of persuasion, that every tool they learn will increase their income, will change their life, will enhance their relationships. And everyone agrees they want to do it. And, of course, there's an investment. And what some will do is I've created the hunger. They'll go out and say, oh, I'll get the book. So I've created the hunger, and they satisfied it with the book. And I know based on research that the chances of someone being successful with a book is less than 1%. And I know that it's not going to work. It's great theory, and it's a great start. But as far as really implementing the tools, they needed the training and the coaching, not a book. You can't learn to play basketball by reading a book. It's a great start, but there's other things that you need to do. So what's happening is you're creating the hunger and they're satisfying it somewhere else. Or you're creating the hunger and they can see that they want to do it, but then they want to think about it. They're going to look it up. They want to go to the internet to see what's out there. Is it really a good deal? Or they're sitting on the fence. They're looking for something. They're listening to you. They're talking to you. You've created the hunger, and your job as a persuader is to get them to satisfy it with your product, service, or idea. Another example, a doctor tells you you need to lose weight. So you're thinking joining a gym, doing these other things, but ultimately to satisfy that hunger, you go buy a video of aerobics, or you go buy a used treadmill, or you do something to satisfy that hunger, but it doesn't solve the problem. Or you're talking to someone about a situation they're in, or something that they did wrong, and you sense that you need a lawyer to do some paperwork to protect yourself. And then you find out, wow, how much did that cost? Woo! And you go to the internet and find some form or some way to do it yourself. Now, that's not always bad, but we all know that a lawyer could probably do it much better than an online form. Now, I know that's not always the case, but someone else created the hunger, but the original hunger was satisfied somewhere else. Or something we see as we study network marketing is somebody calls up and they talk about home-based business and being your own boss and how it's going to work and how it's going to change their life, and it's $1,000 investment. They created the hunger. Maybe the person didn't see the value. They want to do it. They want to be an entrepreneur. And they sign up with the $50 network marketing company. That's the challenge we want to face. You want to create the hunger, but you also want them to satisfy it right there. So you have to bring the best of both worlds together. Well, let's spend a few minutes and talk about why this is happening. Why are they running away? Why is this such a knee-jerk reaction? You want to create the hunger, obviously, because that creates the desire, the want, the need, the dissonance for your product or service. So why are they satisfying their hunger somewhere else? Well, it could have been a credibility or trust issue. Sometimes people have the automatic knee-jerk reaction to find the cheapest solution, even though most of the time that's not the best, but that's how they've been programmed. And that's also a subset that they didn't see the value of what you were talking about. You created the hunger. You made them hungry. You made them see the big picture, but they didn't see the value of what you're talking about. Well, sure, I need a home-based business. Well, $50 versus $1,000, I'll do this. Oh, sure, I need to learn about the stock market. Well, I can get this program for $100 and this one's $5,000. But the $5,000 has a 99% success rate and the other one has a 1% success rate. But it satisfied that hunger. Maybe they don't accept you as the expert. Maybe you didn't come across as competent. Maybe they want you just arouse that curiosity just enough for them to search the internet to see what else is out there. And when they do that, the emotion from your presentation is gone, and they usually end up satisfying that hunger somewhere else. It could have been their mood. And now, as you know, mood matters. Their state of mind. Were they in a positive mood or were they in a negative mood? Or you just piqued their interest and they're going to look somewhere else. Now, what happens a lot of times with that is one of the big mistakes of persuaders is, as I've talked about, is they vomit, right? 27 features and benefits. This is why you should do it. Now, when you vomit, a couple things happen. First of all, you've sucked the energy out of them. You've probably given them a couple reasons not to do it. But many times you've maybe piqued their interest with one or two reasons and you've created a hunger and they're like, yeah, I can see where that would benefit me, but I still have a lot of questions. I need to think about it. So you get the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, I need to think about it. You've created a little hunger, but they're going to look someplace else. And a lot of times, 9 times out of 10, when they start looking someplace else, they're going to find a different way to satisfy that hunger. Another big reason why people satisfy their hunger someplace else is a form of dissonance. Now, hopefully you've mastered and studied magnetic persuasion and you understand dissonance. Remember, there's 6 areas of dissonance and a way to solve each one of those. And as a great persuader, you need to be able to read people and understand what they're going through. And understand that if you create this knee-jerk reaction, you create the hunger, that they are going to do it. They are going to purchase a product or service, but will it be yours? Now, one of the areas of dissonance is separation. As a review, that's where people tend to compartmentalize or ignore the discrepancy of things that are happening. Remember, with dissonance, dissonance is an awkward tension we feel when we do something against our beliefs, our attitudes, our thoughts, or commitments that we've made. Another form of separation is when the people say, well, that doesn't apply to me. That's for other people. Other people need to keep the law, or other people should obey the speed limit. I'm a better driver than them. or other people shouldn't be eating that, but it's okay for me, or other people shouldn't cheat, but I can because of this, this, and this, those are all forms of separation, where it's okay over here, but not okay over here, and they say, well, that doesn't apply to me. And so you've created this hunger, and for some reason, they're having this knee-jerk reaction of separation. What's happening in that situation? It's usually a form of esteem. Remember that self-esteem is how much you like yourself, and esteem is an all-time low. And what we notice with great persuaders is they help people feel better about themselves, and they can help them see the big picture. They can help them see using their products or service. They can help their prospects or the audience see themselves using their product or service. What they do is they get them past the worry state, where they're worrying about what could go wrong, and what about this, and I don't understand this, and this could happen over here, and relieve that and get them into the vision mode, to where they can see themselves, taste, touch, feel, use their product or service. Until your audience can see themselves using your product or service, nothing else is going to matter. And that's what great persuaders do. You've created a hunger, but they're going to satisfy it someplace else. Help them see themselves using your product or service. And if they can't see themselves using your product or service, you will get a knee-jerk reaction. It's too expensive. I can't afford it. For example, if you were selling annual passes to a water park, an incredible water park for your family, an incredible deal, a no-brainer, they have a family, they would use it, everything looks perfect. They want it, they like it, they need it, they can't afford it. And at the last second, they say, we're just looking, or I need to think about it, or it's too expensive. The reality is, maybe they can't see themselves using the water park. Maybe they can't see themselves walking around in a swimsuit. Maybe they're afraid of the water. They can't see themselves getting into the water. There's other issues involved. We also see that in network marketing. You're asking someone to join. You've given them the hunger of financial independence. You've talked about your great product. They're going to be their own boss. They're going to be their entrepreneur. They're going to travel more. They're excited. They've bought into it. They're hungry. Then all of a sudden, they can't see themselves talking to their family and friends. Those are all forms of separation. You have to understand esteem and why we do what we do. So your job as a great persuader is to help people see themselves do it, raise their esteem, make them feel better about themselves, help them make the decision. You'll run into people that suffer from analysis paralysis, so they want to get all their ducks in a row, or they'll come up with excuses, which we call the loser's limp. Now, a loser's limp is a pre-excuse for failure. Just in case you fail, you come up with it. And it's an excuse. It's almost in a safety net. Well, you know, I'm not quick in my feet, so I don't know if I can do this. Or, well, I'm not good at approaching people. Or I'm not good at knocking doors and asking people about their foreclosure. Well, I'm not good on the phone. The reason they call it a loser's limp is because they see it in sports. When someone's not sure if they're going to win, they'll say, well, my knee's been hurting, or I had a big meal this morning, or, well, I'll just see how well I do because this and this and this has happened, and, you know, I'm not up to full speed yet. What's happening is you're giving your subconscious mind a reason why it's okay to fail. And when you see that in your prospect or your audience, that's a form of dissonance, the separation, where you need to be able to help them see themselves crossing the finish line, see themselves using your product or service. So let's talk about the solution. Why do they flock to your competitors? Why do they buy it from somebody else online? Why do they join another company? Why does it seem they're just looking for information? You give a great presentation, and they go to their competitor and buy from them. What is the solution? Let's talk about what great persuaders are doing to make sure the hunger is satisfied in the right place. Now, we don't have time on the CD to talk about creating the hunger. What I'm going to assume here is you already know how to do that. What can you do to help them satisfy it in the right place? One thing that I've noticed as I study and monitor and observe great persuaders is in a situation like that, they create the hunger, but they also have a relevant story. Great persuaders are great storytellers. There's just no way around it. It doesn't matter who you are. The moment you tell a story, people start to listen. And what happens is subconsciously they put themselves into that story. So whatever's happening in that story is happening to them. Stories grab attention. They persuade without detection, and they make you more authentic. That's why they're so powerful. I want to point out that when you tell a story, you need to be able to paint the picture. You need to be able to relive that through your words. Because I know you've heard a story before, and it was great, and it touched your life, and you tried to tell somebody else, and it didn't do anything. You need to practice telling your stories. Make them come alive. But make sure your story supports your message. Make sure it fits your audience. Make sure you make it rich in detail, that it captures their senses. What we hear as we talk to your audience is great persuaders. When they tell a story, it's like listening to a movie. It comes alive in their mind. So as you tell a relevant story, what it does is shows them what will happen if they go with a competitor or they satisfy the hunger someplace else. For example, in the world of persuasion, a student at the Persuasion Institute admitted this to me a while back. I didn't know that it had happened, but he was very honest and told me this story, that he had come to one of our seminars and he understood the power of persuasion and he realized that he was not able to accomplish what he wanted without the powers of persuasion. He knew it was a great weakness in his life and he knew there's a lot of things that we could train him and teach him to do to double and triple his income. And at the time, he was deep in debt. He said deep down he knew that there would be a great return on an investment understanding and learning persuasion. But at the last second, after he talked to his spouse, the desire kind of faded as she told him that he couldn't do it. So he went out and purchased the book. And he admitted the book was great theory. It was great to help him out on a few things, but it didn't get him where he needed to be. So it was a little over a year, I think almost 2 years later, when he was deeper in debt, he finally called us up. We were able to fine-tune a few things, do some coaching with him, and he was able to double his income. Now, I tell that story to people. That's a relevant story for someone who's sitting on the fence who wants to learn how to persuade. I know I can create the hunger, but if they do go buy a book or do something else or try to figure it out on their own, I know they won't have the results that they want. And he admitted it to me, and so he gave me permission to tell his story, and that's what happened. And he wishes he didn't have that time he wasted in the middle with all that extra debt because he was trying to figure it out on his own work because he satisfied that hunger someplace else. Maybe somebody's selling life insurance and creates the hunger and they see the importance of having life insurance to protect their family, to make sure their family's always provided for, can tell a relevant story. Someone that was thinking about it and they let it go a couple weeks and a couple months and they were involved in a serious car accident and died without the insurance. That would be a relevant story. So become a great storyteller. Help them satisfy the hunger in the right place. Another solution, or something to look at if this happens to you time and time again, is your credibility. Understand right now that you need to be the expert. I bet you know more than 99% of the people out there about your product or service. If you don't, you better start learning. The moment your prospect or audience senses that you are the expert, that you have credibility, there is no resistance. They will do business with you because you're the expert. You're the best. There's no reason to think about it. There's no reason to go someplace else. There's no reason to satisfy their hunger at another location. You're the expert. Now, start acting like the expert. Start being credible. Now, credibility is a subset of trust. Credibility could include being truthful, your history with that person or your history with other people they've known, their experiences with you or your company. That'll either enhance or detract from your credibility. Understand, if you feel that you're in a situation where you don't have a lot of credibility, you may borrow the credibility of other people. If there's somebody you know that can give you an endorsement or a testimonial, or they can talk to that will endorse you or your product or service, get it. You can borrow the credibility of others. If it's someone they know, they respect, or that is famous, wow, more power to you. But even if it's someone off the street they don't know that they're reading about, they're going to believe that many times more than they're going to believe you. So one thing that'll get them to satisfy their hunger at the right place, collect testimonials, get endorsements, become the expert. Other things that can enhance your credibility are your appearance. Now, I know we're not supposed to judge, but we all do. First 30 seconds, we put you in a little category, in a little box. Your appearance matters. Blue tends to be the most credible color. Now, I wouldn't wear a suit to go talk to a farmer about purchasing the farm, but I would dress up. I want to make sure you come across as credible. Your appearance, your accessories, how you look. You need to have the right qualifications. You need to let them know those qualifications without coming across as cocky or arrogant. You want to be prompt. You want to use credible resources. You want to make sure you do the right research. I mean, the worst thing a persuader can do when they're coming into a company and say, "Now, what do you do here?" You're done. You might as well walk out the door. Do your research. Find out as much as you can. Know about the competitors. Know what that company does. Know the situation and background of that person. The more research and study you do, the better chances you have at persuading them. Now, one last thing I want to point out about credibility is something very important as we talked about credibility and trust. When you meet someone for the first time, they're looking for every reason why they shouldn't do business with you. Your goal as a persuader is to find out the one or two reasons they want to do it, give those to them, and now they're looking for every reason why they should. On the same note, when they're talking to you and looking at your product or service, they are looking for a weakness because there is a knee-jerk reaction and people will run when it comes across as, oh, it's too good to be true. Or that person seems too good. There has to be something wrong there. It just looks too good. In fact, I've consulted with many people, looked at their product or service that wasn't selling very well, and sometimes there's just too much in there that it's too good to be true. We have to take some things out. So what I want to point out is one way to increase your credibility is to give them a weakness. Because if you don't give them one, they will assign one to you. Now, when I talk about a weakness, I'm not asking you to tell them that you are a felon or an axe murderer or kleptomaniac or never show up on time. I'm talking about weaknesses that you can turn into strengths. You could reveal a weakness. They're going to find out anyway. They're looking for it. Give them one. Even the big boys do it. Smuckers. It's a jam. It's a terrible name and they make fun of it. Or there's Avis. We're number two, weakness, but we try harder. Listerine, the taste you hate twice a day. It's nasty. Gets the job done. 7-Up, the young cola. VW in the 60s, when they were selling all the Volkswagen Beetles, the bugs, they said that this car's so slow, you'll never get a speeding ticket. They were truthful. They'd revealed a weakness, but people didn't care because it also enhanced their strength. Let's say, for example, you're doing real estate and you're trying to purchase a home and you're a one-person show and you're trying to go against a large corporation of, say, 100 people. That could be perceived as a weakness. Tell them, say, look, I know there's many big corporations that want to purchase this property. It is just me. I'm a one-person show. Okay, you revealed a weakness. Now let's turn it into a strength. What that means is when you work with me, you won't get lost in the cracks. You have access to me and my cell phone 24 hours a day. This is the only project I'm working on right now. I will share with you everything I do every step of the way, and we can make this win together. So you've taken that weakness and turned it into a strength. Enhance your credibility, increase your trust, and they'll satisfy the hunger in the right spot. Another way to keep the hunger in check, to make sure they satisfy the hunger at the right place, is known as connectivity. Developing rapport. When people like you, even if they did have to think about it, they will come back. People buy from people they like, that are like them, that they've connected with, that there's been some type of rapport, that there's been some type of positive experience with you. Here are the brutal numbers. When people have a positive perception of you, there's a 90% chance of persuading them. When they have a negative perception of you, you have a 10% chance. And then you say to yourself, no, people like me. I have good people skills. I can connect with anyone. I can talk with anyone. Well, that might be true, but they still don't like you. You know that annoying salesperson or person in your office or someone you know that's your family that's always talking to you and outgoing and think they're the life of the party and think they're so funny and they think everyone likes them, but they're annoying and nobody wants to spend time with them and nobody likes them? Reality check. That could be you. Now, I know you're in denial and thinking, well, no, I don't think so. It doesn't matter what you think. It's what your audience thinks. So at least let's improve your ability to connect with people. Two ways to really enhance your connectivity. And remember, these need to be done in a sincere manner. And you need to do it with the right intent. The first one is finding common ground or finding similarities. Now, I didn't say identical. I said find something similar. Because if you were identical, if you showed up to someone's office or their home wearing the exact same clothes that they were wearing, that's being identical. And human nature is such that that will repel. That bothers people. When you have the exact same car and the same color, you're wearing the exact same clothes. I said a few similarities. It could be morals, opinions, lifestyles, background, religion, sports, anything that you have in common. It could be personality traits, a variety of different things. Because we've seen at social gatherings, when we're talking to people, it's almost like we're looking for something we have in common, a reason to keep talking to that person. And the moment there's that connection, the rapport is increased. The connectivity is increased. When you do find something in common, when you find something similar, two things I want you to remember. For it to work, first of all, it needs to be relevant to what you're talking about. And it needs to be positive. Find something in common, but it needs to be positive. Oh, you're a shoplifter too? Oh, you're a convicted felon? Where did you serve time? It needs to be positive. In fact, there's a famous study that was done when there were hippies, and people would dress either in the hippie style or in the normal style. And what they'd do is they'd come up and they'd ask them for money to help make a phone call. And when they dressed the same, when they were similar, it doubled and almost tripled their chance of having them comply and giving them a coin to make the phone call. When they weren't dressed the same, the compliance went way down. So the first part of connecting I want to focus on is similarity. The second one is developing that rapport, that connection with them. Rapport is kind of an instant synchronization. You've met someone, the first 30, 60 seconds, you like them. You like what they're about. You feel comfortable around them. It's a harmonious link. And there's two ways to do that. The first is our nonverbal behavior. Every gesture we have attracts or repels the person that we're talking to. And most of the time, we don't pay attention to our nonverbals or their nonverbals. You have to monitor what you're doing with your hands and your stance. What is your shoulder saying? For example, you can read people. When you're talking to somebody and their shoulder is facing you, their chest is not facing you directly, that is a sign they're ready to go. They're trying to get away. They're not listening. They don't care. You haven't connected. When you're square up and the shoulders are square, that's a good sign that you have connected. And there's a long list of different things that you can do. Just watch your nonverbal behavior. And the second part is mirror and matching. Now, I didn't say mimicking. Mirror and matching is a natural human response. When we get near someone we like, when we create a rapport, we start standing like that person or sitting like that person, using the same words as that person, breathing at the same rate as that person. It's a natural thing. You watch two people at a party that have connected. They are probably holding their drinks the same way. They're leaning the same way. They're doing the same things. It is natural. So if they're leaning back, eventually you can do that. If they're leaning forward, do the same. Match them. In fact, a university professor wanted to do a little research on this, and she'd go to different restaurants. She'd pick someone across the way that could kind of see them in their peripheral vision, and she would take a drink when they took a drink, wipe her face with a napkin when they did it, take a bite when they took a bite, and ultimately they would come over after dinner and say, "Do I know you? You seem very familiar to me." Along that same note, you need to learn to mirror moods. We've all been attacked by the high energy, very enthusiastic, foaming at the mouth salesperson. And we just weren't in the mood for it, and we clashed. You need to mirror their mood. Sure, you can bring them up to a better state. Sure, you can change their mood, but you need to mirror their mood where they're at right now. If they're melancholy, if they're a little depressed, your high energy is not going to help that situation. Now, again, eventually you want to get them up there. Mirroring their moods, mirroring their energy, mirroring their language, mirroring all these different things goes a long way to develop that rapport. Again, when you've connected with someone, when you've built that rapport, there's no reason for them to go someplace else. They found somebody that they like, and they will do business with you. Let's give you another solution. Because why would you give a one-hour presentation, a 30-minute presentation, get people excited, create the hunger, and have them go someplace else? You've done most of the work. You've planted the seed. They know that they need to do something. It might as well be with you. So when it gets to that situation that you've created the hunger, how can you keep them from satisfying that hunger someplace else? Well, it all comes back to urgency, scarcity, or what social psychologists called psychological reactance. What that means is that the threat of losing $1,000 creates more pain than the thought of gaining $1,000. Now, as I study the different laws of persuasion, the one persuasion that's been overused and used in the wrong way is scarcity. Oh, sale ends today. Or when you go to the shoe store, this is the last one left in your size. Limited supply. There's not enough left. Order today. But we have to back up and understand human nature. If you give someone 4.5 months to pay their taxes, how long are they going to take? 4.5 months. So you still need to create some urgency, but it needs to be legitimate. It needs to be done in the right way, and it needs to be believable. I remember going into a store. They provided cellular service. At the time, I had service with somebody else. I walked in. I was kind of monitoring the persuaders, what they were doing right, what they could improve on. I was looking around, and they had this new great deal. And I was intrigued. They were going to let me switch phone numbers. They were going to do this for me to switch over and do this and this and this. And they had extra phones, and it was starting to look pretty good. And then I wasn't sure because I had to bounce it off a few people. It wouldn't just be my phone. It would have been a corporate deal. And there's other phones involved. And I wanted to bounce it off other people and people that knew more about the billing and what we were paying and things that I didn't know at the time. So it was a legitimate, I need to think about it. Now, she did create the hunger. Now I was going someplace else. But now I was leaving, I could satisfy that hunger someplace else. Now, she was close to keeping my business, but then she said, oh, wait a minute, this offer ends today. And I looked at her and said, are you telling me that if I don't come back in 4 days and switch 10 phones with you, you won't give me that deal? She kind of rolled her eyes, shrugged her shoulders, says, yeah, I'll give it to you. And that just lost all credibility for me. It's been overused. It's been abused. We have to use it in the right way. A great example is Disney. Nobody sells more DVDs and videos than Disney. Last time this decade, I've heard last time this century, it'll go back into the Disney vault. You won't see it. And you know what? They do. It's gone. You won't see it. And we know that it's true, and it triggers an incredible amount of sales. So can you provide a legitimate deadline? Are they going to lose an opportunity? Is there limited space? Are they going to miss out? So you need to create some type of a deadline that's legitimate, that creates scarcity that they believe. So look for a way to establish a deadline. Our price is going to go up? Don't make it up. Make sure that it's real. Is there limited space? Do you only take 10 people a month? If that's true, let people know. Or they might lose out. They might lose their freedom. If you don't get this DVD now, you won't be able to get it for 5 years. One thing I've noticed at the Persuasion Institute studying scarcity and how it's being overused and abused is this. When someone comes down to that moment of decision, you've created the hunger, and you sense they might try to satisfy that hunger someplace else. I have found that you want to use a combination of scarcity and reward. Let them know the price goes up in 2 weeks. What I mean by that is that create a deadline, create some type of scarcity, but at the same time, reward them. So, if they can make a decision in those 2 weeks, not only will you get the great deal, you will give them a free extended warranty. You will give them free delivery. You will give them a free CD or free report. See how that works? Bring the scarcity and reward together. It increases your ability to persuade, and it increases your chances of them not satisfying their hunger someplace else. Last but not least, something I've talked about, I've been harping on, but most people aren't doing it the right way or even doing it at all, is the guarantee, which has to be used at the right time, with the right person, with the right product. We need guarantees. Now, you don't lead off with the guarantee. We know that. This is for someone that is starting to trust you, that has accepted you as an expert, someone that you've connected with, someone that has a reason, a need, a want to purchase your product or service. When that's happening and they're sitting on the fence, they're going back and forth and you can see this, that's when you bring out the guarantee. And when you come out with that guarantee, they need to be thinking, wow, nothing to lose and everything to gain. That's why you see many stores say, look, go ahead and buy the product. If you find it cheaper anywhere else in the next 90 days, we'll give you that price. In fact, we'll double the difference. Wow, that's a great guarantee. Now, most people don't go look, but it gives them that satisfaction to know that they're going to get the best price. That's what you need with your product or service. What is your guarantee? What can you do? And you can even bring the guarantee down to a lower level to just to get to an appointment. If there's someone that you want to meet with, could you have a guarantee like this? To get an appointment, listen to this. Say, Mr. Franklin, I know I have a product or service that can increase profits in your company. Give me 10 minutes of your time. And if I don't give you 3 reasons why this product or service will change your life or change your company or change your profit or save you money, whatever it is that you need to use, give me 10 minutes. And if it's not everything that I say, I will give you $50 cash. I will give you $100 cash. And then they're thinking, wow, nothing to lose, everything to gain. 10 minutes. It could be a gift certificate to a restaurant. If it's in a spot or a location or a situation where you couldn't give them cash, donate it to their favorite charity. Promise to bring in food for the company the next day. There's a lot of different variations of this, but give them that guarantee. Guarantees are powerful at the right place. It makes people sleep better and feel better to know that no matter what, they're going to be taken care of. Believe in your product or service. Believe in yourself and guarantee everything that you do. In closing, don't let your prospects, your audience, your patients, your clients, your customers satisfy their hunger someplace else. You know as well as I do that if they do that, they're going to be disappointed. Let's say, for example, that you sell computers. Now, I know everyone probably has a computer, but let's imagine they were talking to someone, persuading someone that they needed to have a computer. It would help them with their finances, access to the internet, the email, simplify their life, time management. And they were persuading someone who didn't have a computer that they needed a computer. And they went through all the bells and whistles and they were creating this hunger. The person could see, yes, this could really enhance my life. And then they say, look, this is one of the best computers you're going to get. It has the best warranty. It comes with the software. It does this, this, and this. And it's $3,000. Now, let's say, for example, there wasn't trust or there wasn't any expertise and they created that hunger, but they weren't sure and they weren't going to make that decision right now. There wasn't a guarantee of the things that we've talked about. And so they give them the knee-jerk reaction, well, I need to think about it, or it's too expensive. And they go out and find a super retail computer store and find one for $400. And they take it home, they satisfied the hunger, but then they realize, well, wait a minute, this doesn't have software. It doesn't have any support. It didn't come with a few things that they needed. And it's probably going to break in a couple months anyway because it's the lowest quality. The computer salesperson created the hunger, satisfied someone else, devastating consequences. You believe in your product or service. You know that it can change their life. Follow these steps. Continue to create the hunger. Follow these steps to make sure they satisfy the hunger with you. And when you master that, you will become unstoppable as a persuader.